by offering my humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And I make a prayer to Swami that he makes us all understand that he is the one who speaks and he is the one who listens through all of us. First of all, a warm welcome to all of you. Prashanta Nilayam, it's so wonderful to have all of you here. And thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts with you. At the very outset, if any time I speak a little faster, if you don't understand anything, please, you can ask me to stop and repeat, because I understand that we speak in an Indian accent English, which is not very easy to follow. So you can always stop me if I'm going too fast, if I'm saying something which is not very understandable. But anyway, even when I talk about speaking in a language which you cannot understand, I'm reminded of an incident which happened in the year 1967, a long time ago. In the city of Madras, now it's rechristened as Chennai, the southern city of Madras, Swami had invited all the office bearers of the Sai organization for a meeting. It was the Indian Sai organization. Swami gave a discourse. A lot of important decisions were taken during that meeting. After the discourse, Swami had invited only the main people in the organization for a special meeting in the interview room. So Swami invited all of them and Swami started speaking in Telugu, very, very fluently and very fastly. There was one person in that group, his name was Burgula Ramakrishna Rao. He was a very eminent devotee of Swami. He's been a governor of a few states. He's been a governor of a few states in India. He's been in very good, very important posts in the government. So he stopped Swami. He said, "Swami, you're speaking in Telugu." And in the gathering, there was one person who could not understand Telugu. There was Mr. Indulal Shah. I don't know, many of you would have heard his name. Indulal Shah is one of the senior devotees who's in Mumbai, who's been instrumental in setting up the organization. So this Mr. Ramakrishna Rao told Swami, "Swami, I think someone needs to translate what you say, because you're speaking in Telugu and Indulal Shah is here." Swami looked around and he found that Indulal Shah was the only person who was there who did not understand Telugu. Everybody else could understand at least to a fair extent. And Swami said, "It'll be a waste of time doing translation for one person. So what to do? Because he's an important person, he needs to understand what Swami says." Swami said, "Indulal Shah, come here." And he walked up to Swami. And Swami gave him a pat on his head. And can you imagine, for the next 1.5 hours, he understood Telugu like it was his native tongue. And interestingly, after the interview ended, he forgot Telugu. It was only for that period. So though what I speak may not be completely understood by you, as Swami says, the language which we all communicate is the language of the heart. And we're talking about the one who's the ruler of our heart, so I hope there won't be any difficulty in understanding what I say. I've been given a very interesting topic. Yesterday my brother Bishu was here. I think he has spoken everything that has to be said about gratitude. I won't have much to tell about it. But the topic I've been given is gratitude being expressed as service. All of you are aware that in the Sai organization, service is a very, very important concept. Because when Swami started the Satya Sai organization, Swami named it Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. Seva means selfless service. A spiritual master as grand as Swami, a person who has come to give us the ultimate wisdom, that is how I would like to see Swami as, he told us to do seva. If he told us to do seva, then there must be something absolutely special about seva, absolutely unique about service. Even as I was sitting behind there, I saw this lovely tag you all are wearing around your neck. It says, "We are one." So this seva can be so special only if it can lead us to that state of oneness. And Swami, who has come here to lead us to that oneness, will give us anything, will give us any tool, be it bhajans, be it any other activity which Swami prescribes as part of the Sai organization, only if it can lead us to that oneness. That is why we all are here. So in this talk, my attempt would be to try to understand how seva can lead to oneness. This is of course from the many discourses Swami has given, and also some breakthrough scientific discoveries which are kind of leading to this understanding. But that is going to be much later, we'll come to that later. Let us talk about gratitude, just a little bit. I won't go too much into it. You know, in the year 1989, Swami one day suddenly made an announcement that all the overseas devotees who are present in the ashram will be called for a special session inside the bhajan hall. So there were a lot of devotees, a lot of overseas devotees. Only the overseas devotees were filled into the bhajan hall, and Swami gave them a discourse. This was in the year 1989. It was a very beautiful discourse where Swami spoke about, I think we all are aware of the five D's. Very often we have read about it. Swami speaks about the five D's: devotion, dedication, determination, detachment, and discipline. So in this discourse, Swami spoke about the five D's. Why I'm referring to this is, Swami defined devotion in a way I have not read in many other places. Swami asked, what is devotion? Is singing bhajans devotion? Is doing meditation devotion? Or is all the other yogas and all the other spiritual practices that we all involve in, even seva, is that devotion? Swami said, no. These are all only expressions of devotion. These are not devotion. Then Swami went on to explain, devotion is nothing but gratitude. Gratitude is devotion. And when you feel gratitude to God, you seek means of expressing it. You seek means of showing Him that you are grateful. And for that, you do bhajans, you do meditation, you do all the other disciplines you take upon yourself, sadhana, service. So Swami said, true devotion is nothing but gratitude. I don't know about others, but I was so thrilled to read this because this was the first time I'm seeing such a wonderful definition for devotion. And interestingly, this just happened to cross me after this topic was given to me, so I was all the more thrilled because I knew that this is what Swami was wanting us to learn today. When I say wanting us, I too am learning with all of you. I'm not here in the capacity of somebody who's telling you something. In the process of wanting to come and talk to you, even I have learned. So I am grateful to all of you for that. Why should we be grateful to God? As I said, yesterday's speaker spoke to you at length about it. Many of us feel that there isn't much for us to be grateful about. The population of the earth today is about 7 billion. Only in India there are 1.2 billion people. How many know Swami? How many have the pleasure of coming to have Swami in their lives? If we give importance to Swami, if we give importance to the presence of Swami, then we shall give as much importance to Swami's presence in our lives, which should express itself as gratitude. Because Swami allowed so many people not to know of Him, but He allowed few to know of Him. And we are part of that few. Isn't that enough reason to be grateful? In the 1990s, one day Swami was in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, we have something called a Trayi session. Swami's residence in Vrindavan is called Trayi. And after the evening bhajans, Swami would invite the students for a session with Him. And typically, Swami would become 20% more mischievous than He is outside. Because He is with all teenagers, little students, there will always be a little bit of leg pulling. Rarely Swami would be His serious self. But when He does, he gives us very, very profound insights. That day, Swami asked, "What is my greatest miracle? Boys, tell me, what is my greatest miracle?" So each one started taking a shot. Somebody said, "Swami, the whole world is in your hand." Swami would often say that, right? "You could materialize anything." And Swami would tell in Telugu, "I can change the sky into the earth into the sky." So one boy said that, "Swami, you can change the earth into the sky and sky into the earth." Swami said, "No, no, no." In one of the gatherings, Swami had once told, there were about 4 or 5 boys. Swami said, "One day I'm going to change all of you into girls." Swami said, "I can do it and I will do it." So one boy said, "Swami, you can change a boy into a girl and a girl into a boy." Swami said, "No, no, no." Then Swami said something very, very profound. He said, "See, this is an age of communication. This is an age of information. Because we all communicate so much more easier now than even 10 years ago." Swami said, "This is an age of communication and information." And Swami said, "See, you all are seeing how much happens around Swami. How many phenomenal things Swami does. You see the work which Swami does. You see the number of people Swami has cured from incurable diseases. We all have seen it in front of our eyes. We've seen Swami doing things which we cannot imagine." Swami said, "See, so much is happening around me. Why is it that the world does not know? How is it that the world does not know?" Swami said, "See, you all are in Bangalore. If an aeroplane does not land properly in San Francisco, in the US, sitting in your dining hall in Bangalore, you know about it. You come to know about it that very same day. How come the world does not know about me?" Swami said, "That is my greatest miracle. Because I have not permitted them to know. In this age of information and communication, I have decided that only few know about me." Interestingly, this very episode, one of the students who was narrating to us, after this session got over, he went back to his home in Bangalore. He would have this habit of watching the news on the television while having dinner. He turns on the TV and what does the news anchor say? "An aeroplane did not land properly in San Francisco. Here is a report of how it happened. Isn't this one reason good enough for us to be ever so grateful to Swami? When I was in school, my teacher used to tell us a very beautiful example and give us a very beautiful example. In olden days, there was nothing like a flashlight, you know, what you call a torch, a searchlight. There was nothing like that. They would use a lantern, you know, the typical lantern which the olden days people used to carry. There used to be a flame in it. They would cover all the sides of the lantern and leave only one side open. So it would work like a torch. You carry it around, you can use it like a torch. And in those days, the policemen used to carry a lantern like this. What is the idea is, if they find somebody suspicious on the road, they would go up to him and flash the light on his face. The person on whose face the light is being flashed, the policeman can see his face, but that man cannot see the policeman because the lantern is covered on all sides. So this teacher of mine used to say, if you want to see who is holding the lantern, you have to request the person, "Sir, can you show who you are? Can I see who you are?" So that person turns the lantern towards himself and then you can see him. And this teacher used to tell us, God can see all of us. God sees us every day, day in and day out. But if we have to recognize God, God should choose to show himself up to us. And that God, he has come on earth and he has allowed us to recognize him. He has allowed us to know him. Because he has proclaimed in his own way, in many, many ways, to each one very, very uniquely. So this itself is a reason good enough to be grateful to God. What is gratitude? You know, putting it very, very simply, because I will use this much later when I come there. Gratitude is giving in return. When you receive something, you express gratitude. So first of all, you have received, right? So what you give is in return. Let me say I go to the coffee shop. I tell the man at the coffee shop, can you give me a cup of coffee, please? So he gives me a cup of coffee. I give him 10 rupees to him. No, I pay 10 rupees. So he has given me something. I have given something. The transaction is over. How funny it would be. I say, give me a coffee. He gives me a coffee. I give him 10 rupees. He gives me another coffee. I again give him 10 rupees. He gives me another coffee. It would be an endless loop. Why doesn't it happen that way? Because I know once I give that 10 rupees, the transaction is over. I don't expect anything in return. So when you say gratitude, gratitude is something which you give and you don't expect anything in return. And what was Swami saying? The bhajans that you do, the seva that you do, the meditation that you do, all these are expression of gratitude, which means you do it without expecting anything in return. You are doing it as something which you want to give back to Swami for what you received, not as an investment. Not saying that, Swami, 10 hours of bhajans, this much money in the bank. Swami, 20 sandwiches given to homeless people, you know, this many acres of land. It's not an investment. That's why Swami said, all these actions are expressions of gratitude. And devotion is nothing but gratitude expressed. When we were students, needless to say, we were a little more lucky. Don't ask us why, we don't know. But we were lucky. Swami would often say, I spend 70% of my time with my students. Now that's a lot. And as we were sitting there for Swami's darshan, we would see that prime ministers and presidents would come. They would get 10 minutes, 15 minutes audience with Swami. But Swami would stand in front of us for hours together and keep talking. Swami would come into our hostels, which was nothing but our lodging place, sit there and chat with us. I'm just tempted to recollect one incident which happened when Swami one day walked into the hostel. You know, at what time did he walk into the hostel? At 5:30 in the morning. Those days the hostel was not what it is right now. It was a huge hall like this, where about 40, 50 to 60 students used to stay. They used to do their suprabhatam there, they used to do their bhajans there, they used to sleep there. So all beddings used to be rolled up, they used to do their suprabhatam and then go about their daily job. At 5:30 in the morning, imagine Swami walks into the dormitory. Could have been a little funny sight because there were some boys stealing a nap. You're not supposed to sleep after suprabhatam, but there were some boys who was sleeping a little, that extra 10 minutes after suprabhatam. Swami walks in and typically of Swami, hey, Dunnapata, you fellows are lazy. Imagine Swami walks into an empty hall like this. There is not even a throne for him. There is not even a seat to offer for him. And what do these boys do? They roll up a bed, put it in one corner, and Swami sits on that bed. And Swami sits there and Swami asks for one particular boy. Swami says, where is this boy? Names one boy. And they look around, they find that that boy alone is missing. Exactly for one boy who is not there in that gathering. So everybody is frantically looking around. Swami says, you boys don't know where your friends are, where your brothers are. So Swami is sitting there, all these boys sitting around Swami, and Swami is talking to them. And suddenly they hear somebody singing in a very hoarse voice, a bhajan, not very pleasant to the ear, and coming from the outside corridor. And even as Swami was talking to these boys, Swami said, that boy is coming. So they see this boy, you know, just to give you an idea of the scene, let us say the entrance to the hall is in that far side of the hall, and Swami is sitting, let's say, to where I'm sitting. So they see this boy walking all across the corridor and entering to that last door. Swami is saying, see, that boy has come. And Swami asked him, where were you? And even before that boy could answer, Swami said, you know this boy, all of you lazy fellows, you slept after suprabhatam. This boy went to the garden and he was plucking flowers to make a garland for Swami. And all the while he was singing bhajans. Swami said, I was so pleased with him, I came to bless him. And that boy is in the far side of the hall and Swami is sitting here. Swami said, boy, catch. Okay, and Swami just did this and everybody knew that Swami had nothing in his hand because they were all sitting around Swami. But out of habit, they just followed the hand, the trajectory of the hand, and Swami did this. And one of those boys were there, was one of my lecturers. He told me this personally. And as they followed the trajectory of what would have been in Swami's hand, they found a laddu being formed in the midair. They could see the formation of the laddu in the midair and it went straight to his hand. Laddu is an Indian sweet. It's a round Indian sweet which you still will find in the canteen. So Swami just did like that and everybody followed Swami's hand and in midair they're seeing one laddu forming and the boy catches. So then Swami looks around. Everybody is looking at Swami expectantly. What about us? And Swami said, all of you also want laddus? He said, yes, Swami, please. Then Swami looks at one of the teachers. He says, go to the kitchen and get me a big basket. There were huge baskets made out of one particular fiber. There were huge baskets. So he's all excited, runs inside the kitchen and brings this huge basket and puts it in front of Swami. So all these boys are imagining how Swami is going to materialize laddus for 60, 70 boys. You know, maybe Swami is going to cover it with a cloth and open it and give laddus. Swami, they bring the basket. Swami says, will this hold 60 laddus? He said, yes, Swami, this will hold. Good. Call the cook, ask him to make and fill it up. This was just one such very sweet incident. You know, imagine when we were students, we were told that Prince Charles wanted a appointment with Swami. We were told that the President of America wanted an appointment with Swami. But this Swami was walking into our dining halls, walking into our kitchens, was walking amongst us. I remember when I was in my third year undergraduate, it was one of the last few days of our student days in the course. So we wanted to tell Swami that we have completed our course. We wanted to just give a rose to Swami and say that Swami, we are very grateful for having accepted us. And we all strategically planned which is the best place to sit so that when Swami comes, we will be visible to Swami. So we chose the spot. We sat there. And to our bad luck, who came and sat right opposite to us? I don't know, being from European countries, India is a cricket-crazy country. I don't know if you know the names I'm going to mention. Two of the most popular Indian cricketers, Sunil Gavaskar and Rahul Dravid. They're like legends. They're like, what should I say, like Pele of... Sunil Gavaskar is like the Pele of football. It's one of the most famous... That apart, he was a favorite devotee of Swami. That's even worse for our situation that day. And those two came and sat right opposite us. And even that day, Swami came and spoke to us, took every rose from every boy who offered. You know, when we look at it, Swami gave us so much. As students, whether Swami spoke to us, not spoke to us, Swami gave us a ring, did not give us a ring, gave us a chain or not. We all were so grateful to Swami for even allowing us to be Swami's students. And it's understandable that our hearts were overflowing with gratitude. It's nothing great on our part. I mean, it has to be so. So we would often go to Swami and say, Swami, what can we do for you in return? Swami, you have given us so much. What can we give you in return? We want to do something for you. And invariably, Swami would only ask for one thing. Swami would say, be good. Swami would say, be good boys. Be good. That's okay, Swami. Anything else? You know, that's our attitude. But that is all that he wanted. Swami said, be good. Just be good. And Swami would often say, be good, see good, do good, hear good. It looks like such a very simple word. It looks like such a very simple expectation from Swami. But that is what is a command which can guide our entire life. How do we define this being good? You know, all of us are good. I don't think any of us are bad in that sense. But what is being good? Many times when I look at it, and what is this, Swami? What is to be good? What is to be good? In my understanding, it might not be complete. It might not be right. But I'll just share it with you. The perfect definition of goodness was given by Jesus Christ in the Bible. The one sentence which he says, "Do unto others what you wish that others do unto you." And interestingly, this is a statement which will repeat in many, many, many scriptures that came before and after the Bible. But has been given to us resoundingly by Jesus Christ. He said, "Do unto others what you wish others do unto you." Why is this so special? If I don't like to be spoken rudely to, I don't speak rudely to others. If I don't like being belittled, I don't belittle others. When I am in pain, if I expect others to come and console me, then I should go and console those in pain. If I am in trouble and I wish others come and help me, I should go and help those who I see are in trouble. So when Swami said, "Be good," Swami said, "Treat others like how you would treat yourself." Essentially, the quality of empathy. When you see somebody in pain, we have to think that if I were to be in the same pain, and then go and help. If somebody is doing a mistake, to stop and think, what if I was doing this mistake? Wouldn't I seek people to forgive me? So shouldn't I forgive? This is essentially what being good is, according to me. The feeling of empathy. Coming to seva, and why seva has got anything to do with this feeling of goodness. You know, there is one beautiful Chinnakatha which Swami says, which I feel is the perfect description of how Swami wants each one of us to do service. There is this sage, old sage, who's taking his bath in a river. You know, we Indians have this tradition of doing Sandhya Vandanam. What we call is, you do a worship to the sun. You go waist deep into the water and you offer prayers to the sun god. It's a very typical Indian ritual. So this person is doing that ritual. And as part of that, you're supposed to take a little of the river water in your hand and then offer it as you're offering it to the sun god. So when he picks up that palm full of water, he finds that a scorpion is there in his palm. The moment he sees it, he thinks that, oh God, the scorpion must have been drowning in the water. So he says, "Thank God I lifted it." But what does the scorpion do? It stings him. So the moment it stings him, in the pain, he drops it into the water. And then he sees the scorpion is struggling in the water because it's drowning. What does he do? He again picks it up. And what does the scorpion do? It again stings. So again he drops it into the water. Again he sees the scorpion struggling, he picks it up. Again the scorpion stings, again he drops it. So till he is able to get it to the shore, he's doing this juggling, dropping, picking, and finally gets it to the shore. There are a few youngsters who are sitting there in the bank who see this weird sign, the scene, and they go up to this old man and say, "What were you trying to do? What were you doing with the scorpion?" He said, "The scorpion was after all stinging you. Why did you want to help it?" The man says, "No, I did not help the scorpion. But what were you trying to do? You were trying to pick it up from the water." So he said, "See, that scorpion was struggling in the water. And when I saw the scorpion struggling, there was immense pain in me. The only way I could soothe that pain was to save that scorpion. So I picked up the scorpion. But then the scorpion stung me. That pain was too unbearable. So I dropped the scorpion. Again I saw the scorpion drowning. Again I could not bear the pain the scorpion was going through. So the only way for me to stop this pain from troubling me was to save the scorpion." So he explained that every time I was only trying to help myself, I was not helping the scorpion. And this is what Swami says: when you go out to do service, don't think that you are going to help somebody. Tell yourself that you cannot bear to see your brother or sister in pain, so you are soothing the pain within you by helping that person. Swami would say, this is how you should do seva. Many years ago, when I was a student, once Swami gave a discourse. In that discourse, Swami was with so much of gusto, with so much of vigor, Swami said, how can you eat lavish food when your brothers and sisters are starving? How can you wear expensive clothes when your brothers and sisters don't have enough to save themselves from the cold? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Swami was not telling, go and serve, they need you. Swami was saying, how dare you? How cruel of you that you don't feel the pain of those who are suffering. And this, I feel, is the most important aspect of the service which Swami wants us to do. Don't do service as going and helping somebody. Do service as an expression of empathy. Feel the pain of the other person. And that empathy is nothing but goodness, which Swami asks from us. When we say, Swami, what do we give you? Swami says, do good. And being good is nothing but having empathy. And this empathy just kept in the heart is useless. It has to be expressed, and it expresses itself as service. I'm going to stop here. I'm going to speak of something which is completely new. I told I'll speak a little bit of science. I don't know if any Italians are here. In the year 1995, in the University of Parma in Italy, there was this scientist who was called Giacomo Rizzolatti. Forgive me if my pronunciation is wrong. This man was a neuroscientist. He was working and trying to understand the human brain. And as all scientists do, you want to understand the human brain, human skin, human eye, you catch a monkey, right? Because if you catch a man, you're going to be put behind bars. So you catch a monkey, it's always safe. So they had caught this monkey, and they were trying to study the human brain. And what were they trying to study? Suppose I do an action. I pick up this cup of water. To do this action, what part of my brain is used? Suppose I see somebody here and I recognize them. To recognize a person's face, what part of my brain is used? Suppose I'm eating something. For performing that act of eating, which part of my brain is being used? So this was the study they were doing. So what did they do? They caught this monkey. They put electrodes all over its skull. And they were seeing where there is electrical activity when the monkey performs a certain action. Because all of brain's activity is electrical impulses in the neurons, the cells of the brain. So this monkey was all wired up, and they were seeing the various actions. If the monkey were to walk, the monkey is sitting, the monkey is standing, the monkey is asking for food, the monkey is eating. So they're seeing all the graphs. Okay, it's this part of the brain, this part of the brain, this part of the brain. One day, their research went very late into their lunch hour. So they said, okay, let's quickly go have lunch and come. Let us leave the monkey as it is. Now, usually they unplug the monkey, they let it free. But they said, today we need to finish this experiment. So let the monkey be the way it is. We'll quickly go finish our lunch, come back, and continue our experiment. So they went and they came back. One of those scientists came back with a gelato, an ice cream. You know, Italians are very fond of ice cream. So this man walked into the lab with an ice cream. He didn't have time to finish his ice cream before he comes into the lab. So he walks into the lab with an ice cream. And then they see that there is some activity in the monkey's brain. So they realize that the monkey has not started doing anything, but already there's some activity in the brain. So when they study it, they realize the monkey's brain is beginning to react as though the monkey is eating the ice cream. Whereas the monkey is only seeing the other researcher eat the ice cream. They're surprised. because the monkey is beginning to show, to believe that it is eating the ice cream. So then they started studying this more and more. Then they came up with this breakthrough in neuroscience, which is beginning to explain a lot of problems which children are facing nowadays. Slow learners, people who are having autistic problems. They are being able to explain many of these and treat many of these because of this understanding which has come. But this is a much more profound discovery than most people understand. Because what happens is, the scientist explains, that if the monkey were to pick up a certain object, let us say 100 neurons fire in this part of the brain. But when the monkey sees another person do the same act, 20 neurons fire in the same part of the brain as the monkey itself is doing the action. So about 20% of the neurons in the same area get fired up. So they call this the mirror neuron system. It's called the mirror neuron system because the monkey is mirroring everything that it sees. The monkey is mirroring all the action that it sees. So now they wanted to see, does this happen even in the humans? So when they took this clinical study to the humans, they found that this mirror neuron system is most advanced in the humans. It's much, much more profound in the humans than in any other species. So now they did another study. Let us say that somebody touches my hand here. So when I touch this hand, there is a certain neuron activity in the brain. Let us say that somebody touches the hand of the person who is sitting in front of me. A few neurons in that area start fired up. So in a sense, a part of my brain is thinking that my hand is being touched. So they explain, what does the brain do? Quickly the brain sends signals to that part of your hand, saying that, were you being touched? Was that you who's being touched? Sensors in this hand return signals to the brain saying that, no, it was not you. You were not being touched. So the brain says, okay, it was not my hand. So then they said, what if we anesthetize this hand? If you don't allow this part of the hand to send that signal to the brain. So they anesthetized the hand and they made a person touch the hand of the person in front of them. And they were shocked to see that the brain was actually thinking that the person's hand was being touched. In other words, it is only this consciousness of this body, only the feeling that this is my body, is stopping you from feeling the other person's brain completely. If there was no body consciousness, I would actually communicate with the brain in your head as much as I would communicate with the brain in my head. But the only thing is, this anesthetization is a very artificial process. Because after some time, the brain figures out that there's something wrong, there is no signal coming. So some of the scientists who are working on this are telling today that if you can, with practice, if you can, with a series of practice and exercise, make your brain believe that you're not just this body, you will actually be in a state of oneness. The scientists are beginning to call this the one brain concept. The more you give up your body consciousness, you are actually going to start believing that everybody around is part of me. And they're saying it is twofold. There are two things which have to happen. What is it? The one thing is the mirror neuron system, which is nothing but empathy. The feeling of empathy comes from this system of mirror neurons. So they say, at one hand, you should empathize, and the other hand, you have to give up the feeling that you are this body. When these two are done simultaneously, you actually transcend the feeling that you are this body, and you transcend the belief that I am separate from the other person. You come to a state where you believe the oneness, where you say we are one is no more a concept. And isn't this what Swami taught us when he asked us to do service? Because on one hand, Swami was telling, do service by empathizing. On the other hand, Swami was telling, I am not this body. I am not this body. I am not this body. So doing one and not doing the other does not complete the circle. At the same time as you go out and serve people and serve them as you're serving yourself, you also go through this sadhana or spiritual practice of reminding yourself over and over again that I am not this body. I am not this body. Many years ago, we used to do a program on RadioSci on which our listeners used to write to us questions, and Professor Venkatraman used to answer the questions for them. And we would have that on the radio. And those days, there was a RadioSci set in Swami's room. So you can imagine the only multimedia device which Swami was using was a RadioSci set. And thankfully, we were not talking on the radio and Swami was listening. We came much later. But very often Swami would, Swami is relaxing in the room all alone, the boy with Swami would switch on the radio and Swami would listen to some interviews, Swami would listen to some discussions, and then come and give feedback. Swami said, hey, that was wrong what you said. This is not correct. Suddenly Swami said, I heard Sinclair yesterday. Has he come? So then they would explain, Swami, no, Swami, he's not here. What you heard was on the radio. No, Swami's play. Swami would try his best to make us believe that he is that body. One day, this program was going on air when Swami was listening, and the question which was posed to Professor Venkatraman was a very tricky one. The question was, let us say there is a person, and he's a very good person. He's a very, very good man, or a very good woman, a very good person, but he does not believe in God. He is an atheist. He does not believe in the existence of God. Can such a man attain self-realization? Is it mandatory that you should believe in God for you to attain self-realization? That was a question. Professor Venkatraman gave a very scholarly answer. He explained different stages of this whole process. And in essence, what he said was, goodness is always the prerequisite for anything. And definitely for self-realization, goodness is the prerequisite. But when you have goodness, when you lead a good life, you will eventually be led to God. You will eventually be led to the understanding that God exists. And then you will be led on to self-realization. And that was the answer which Professor Venkatraman gave. Swami was quietly listening to this answer. Swami didn't say anything. But this boy who was with Swami, he got a bright idea. He said, if at all anybody is an authority to talk about this, it is Swami. Why not ask Swami for the answer? Why not ask Swami, can an atheist get self-realization? So he turned to Swami, he said, Swami, is it possible somebody who does not believe in God, can he get self-realization? And I'll tell you the word which he used in Sanskrit. He said, Atma Sakshatkar. Can an atheist get Atma Sakshatkar? Which means, Atma Sakshatkar, translating it literally, is the vision of the Atman, the vision of the oneness. So can an atheist get Atma Sakshatkar? And what was Swami's reply? Swami said, definitely. Swami said, definitely, why not? Anybody can get Atma Sakshatkar. Swami explained, if you can give up body consciousness, anybody can get Atma Sakshatkar. But the condition is, the question itself had it, a good person. A person who is good. And as we define goodness, goodness is nothing but empathy. Goodness is nothing but feeling for the other person like he's a part of your own self. And if you have that feeling coupled with this giving up of body consciousness, you can actually reach the state of Atma Sakshatkar. And that was the answer which Swami was giving. And that is why what Swami taught us in service is very, very, very special. One of the very senior students was once sharing with us, Swami was in the portico, Swami was talking to all the students. A very senior devotee came up to Swami and Swami was talking to him about some of the matters in the organization. He was a very active person in the organization. So he was giving details about the activities going on. He was from the West. He had business in Southern America. So at one point, Swami stopped him and Swami asked, how is your sadhana progressing? Sadhana is spiritual practice, the sadhana which you take up, your spiritual activities. Swami asked, how is your sadhana progressing? So this man said, Swami, I have no time. He said, I have no time for sadhana. He said, because I am busy in your organization's activity. I am busy in your mission. He said, I am busy in Swami's mission. There was a frown on Swami's face. Mission? And Swami said, I am not a missionary, sir. Swami said, I am not a missionary, sir. He said, if at all I have a mission, if at all I have come down with a mission, it is only one, and that is to lead you to your truth. That alone is my mission. It is not to build hospitals. It is not to build universities. It is not to serve people. It is not to give blankets to the homeless. If at all I have a mission, it is to lead you to the truth. And if service is a beautiful instrument to lead you to that, I will give you service. And that is what Swami has done. Because service is a beautiful platform to reach the mission which Swami has come to accomplish. That is, each one of us turn to our own self and find the God within. And find the God within through the path of goodness. Reaching your own divinity through the path of goodness. That is what we all are here to achieve. And why gratitude is important in this? As I said, why is gratitude important? Because as we went through, when you do anything and do not expect anything in return, that is gratitude. Because gratitude itself is something which you give in return for something. So what is the point in expecting something when you're giving something in return? It will become like that coffee example. Endlessly, coffee 10 rupees, coffee 10 rupees, coffee 10 rupees. Why did Swami say service should be an expression of gratitude? Because if service is an expression of gratitude, you do service without expecting anything in return. You do service without expecting anything in return. And that is exactly what Krishna told Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, do, but do without expectation. And when will you do without expectation? You will do when you are completely believing that I am not the doer. You will do it only when you completely believe that I am not the doer. So when Swami says gratitude should express itself as service, it means you do service without expecting anything in return. You do service to the person by believing that that person is part of me and I'm serving myself and I serve him or her. And in the process, you try to give up your body consciousness. And that's a lot to do. But I think even to worry about it means that you believe that you are the doer. So let's not worry about it. Many, many years ago, I think sometime in the 1980s, Swami would often take Swami's students to the villages nearby. And Swami would make them, like what we have as Grama Seva today. Those days it used to be in a very small scale. Swami would take up one village. Swami would go there, inaugurate a temple, feed the people there, distribute clothes. I think during the 60th birthday, Swami was going to a village which is nearby, which has no access through road. It has no roads at all. So before Swami could visit the village, the students had to go there and build a road. So every day they would go and build a road. About 16, 17 miles of road was built by students so that Swami's car could go and reach that village. So one such day, Swami came to the portico. Boys were sitting there. Swami said, you know what? Tomorrow when you go to the village, I'll come along with you. Swami said, I'll come with you in the bus. All these boys were very excited. You know, these are all Swami's small ways of exciting little children about doing good things. Swami would also involve himself so that it would become all the more beautiful for these children who are trying to learn to do good. So Swami said, I'll come with you in the bus. And then Swami threw another carrot at them. Swami said, when I come with you in the bus tomorrow, I will show you how I do miracles. Swami said, when I come in the bus tomorrow with you, I will show you how I perform my miracles, how I materialize objects. You can see, you can imagine all the years were pointed up there. You say, my God, this is going to be something for your diary. This is going to be something which has to be written and cherished forever. And quite understandably, that night the hostel would have been filled with sleepless souls. Everybody twisting and turning in excitement. What is Swami going to do tomorrow? What is Swami going to do tomorrow? So everybody is up early, ready. They've all finished their bath. They get into the bus. And Swami got into his car, which was parked in front of the bus, and they start. Everybody's sitting with fingers crossed. Will Swami keep up his word? Swami might just say, I just had fun. Will Swami remember that he promised us this thing? So everybody is eagerly waiting. Will Swami come? Will Swami come? So at one point in the road where there is no crowd, it's a little desolate, Swami stops the car and gets into the bus. So everybody is nervous and everybody is like all ears to Swami. Swami makes himself comfortable, sits down, and Swami says, yes, now I'll tell you how I do my miracles. So everybody craning around and grouping around Swami. And Swami explained, there are three ways objects can be made. There are three ways in which objects can be made. The first one is the process of manufacturing. The simplest. You take raw materials, put it through a process, and you have an end product. Swami said, that is one way of making objects, of producing objects. And Swami said, that is the worldly way. That's how people do. That's what happens in factories. That's what happens in assembly lines. The second way of making objects is when you become a spiritual aspirant, when you become a spiritual person, you start doing spiritual practices, you obtain a certain amount of power. You get some abilities, some spiritual, supernatural, superhuman abilities. Then you can materialize objects. But Swami said that is like using up a reserve. You know, you've earned certain brownie points being a spiritual man, and you're using it up doing all these things. Swami said that is the second way. Swami said mine is the third way. And what is that? Swami said, I think it happens. Swami said, I think it happens. If this was not enough, Swami said, shall I show you? Demonstration, shall I show you? Swami said. Everybody is all excited. Swami said, see, now Swami is thinking, Swami is pointing to his head. Okay, Swami is saying, now Swami is thinking, all boys are here. I want to show boys a diamond ring. You know, Swami is telling this, pointing to his head. Swami is thinking that I want to show these boys a diamond ring. And Swami is having his hand like this, pointing to his head. Everybody's looking at Swami dazed, and Swami said, see, it has come. And they see in Swami's hand a white diamond ring. Swami said, simple, very simple. Thought, it happens. And Swami said, see, look again. Swami said, now Swami's thinking that this white diamond ring should become a green diamond ring. And Swami said, see, it has happened. And there in Swami's hand was a green diamond ring. Swami said, very simple. It's so simple. Swami said, what is required to do this? Swami explained that this is not divinity. This is not divine power. Swami said, this is purity. Purity. This comes out of purity. And Swami explained that from the time this body touched this earth, from the time this body was born, not a single selfish thought has crossed this mind. Not a single evil thought has crossed this mind. And this is the power of purity. If you are as pure as Swami, even you can do this. You will think and it happens. Now why am I saying this? You know, obviously we're not going to reach that state of purity. And obviously even if we reach, we're not going to try to materialize rings and diamond rings. I'm going to cut to another small incident which happened to a senior of mine. He was a senior by a year, a good friend of mine. You know, we are talking about gratitude, we're talking about expressing gratitude. All of us have different ways of expressing gratitude, you know. Many of the students who study here, they say, Swami, we have received so much from you. And Swami will not expect anything in return. So what you receive from Swami, you go and give somebody else. Swami has given us free education. We go free, give education to somebody else who needs. So you find a means to express your gratitude, right? And there are a few of us here who say that, Swami, we have received so much from you, so as gratitude, we want to stay back here and serve you. It's just another expression of gratitude. Everybody has their own means. There are some people who come to know of Swami and they say, Swami, I know you, you've shown yourself to me, so I will go and spread the message that God is here. They say that that shall be the expression of my gratitude. So there were a few of us here who said that, Swami, we would like to stay back and serve you, but it's not easy to do that. Because Swami is a very difficult person to give gifts. It is very difficult to give a gift to Swami. People think that Swami accepts very easily. That's why Swami has been able to build an organization so large. Swami is very difficult to give a gift to. And as students, I can tell you that. When we were graduating the final year, we wanted to very badly give a gift to Swami. But what to give Swami? So we secretly found out the tailor who stitches robes for Swami. So we said, why not we go and stitch some robes for Swami and gift it to Swami? So we found out this tailor in Bangalore who stitches robes for Swami. And from the boys who stay with Swami, we found out the material which Swami uses and all that. Where does he buy the fabric from? So we went to this person and we asked him, and he had all the measurements of Swami because he was Swami's tailor, right? So we secretly got 3 robes stitched and we put it in a beautiful box. We made an ornate box. And a few of my classmates went up to Swami's mandir and we made another card in which we had stuck all our pictures with little one-liner messages to Swami, what Swami means to us. We made a card of that and this box with 3 robes. We went and we sent it inside to Swami and we were half thinking that we'll just send it and run away because we know it's going to come back. We sent it inside and after some time, the boy who took the gift, he said, look, you don't leave because you're giving something. I have to ask Swami, can I take it? Then only I can let you go. So he went inside and very promptly after some time, he came back with the box. And the boy said, Swami has accepted the card and Swami has given back the robe. So we said, sir, please plead to Swami on our behalf. This is a gift from us. And he said, Swami has sent word, Swami has so many robes, he can give each one of you one if you want. And he returned our gifts. And as though to prove his point, the next day all of us got robes, 700 of us. You give 3 robes to Swami, you get 700 robes back. It is very, very difficult to give a gift to Swami. So to such a Swami, if you want to say that, Swami, I want to live all my life in your presence, he's not going to take you easily. He's going to really test you. That's why when we finish our studies, when we say, Swami, I want to be with you, we invariably have a period where we wait for Swami to take us. You know, we don't have any jobs, we're just waiting that Swami should accept us. It is a means which Swami uses so that you yourself can be sure that this is what you want to do in life, maybe. So this senior of mine was going through this period. He had finished his studies and he wanted to stay back and serve Swami. So he was getting a little impatient. He said, Swami, I have so much of energy. I'm a young man. I want to do so much for you. But Swami is not giving me any work. Swami is not giving me a job. What am I to do? So he was getting very, very restless. And he would do all kinds of small little service here and there, just to a little bit of self-satisfaction. But he was very restless. Swami, you're wasting my energies. You're wasting my... You know, in anger, he would say that. One day, it was around 11:30 in the night. 11:30 is very, very late for Puttaparthi. We don't have anything distantly called nightlife here. So at 11:30 in the night, this boy went to the Ganesha, finished his pradakshina so late in the night. And at 11:30, he was walking down what we call the Samadhi Road, you know, where Swami's parents' Mahasamadhi is there. And in that corner, there is a dustbin. It still is a dustbin. But those days, there was no dustbin there. No, there was just a dump yard. People would just go and throw their garbage there. Sadly, that's the practice in India. So this boy was walking there, 11:30 in the night, and he found that you know, there was a huge pile of garbage. There was a stench, it was stinking, there was dirty water flowing, there was a gutter just flowing beside the garbage. And for some reason he felt very pained. He said, Swami, people in your name go to every country in the world and do service. Here in your Puttaparthi, outside your parents' samadhi, people have made such a mess and nobody is here to clean it. He said, what a sad plight. So he just thought to himself that maybe next day he will go to the ashram and go to the maintenance and inform them that this needs to be done. Somebody needs to come and clean it up. This is such a sacred spot. You can't leave it so dirty. So he was thinking all this in his mind and he was walking back home. Then he thought, why should I go and ask somebody else? Why not we do it ourselves? Why can't I go and call some of my friends, my classmates, and why don't we come and do it? So he said, okay, fixed, we'll do it. And in his mind, he was planning what all needs to be done. So he said, first the garbage has to be removed, then the wall needs to be painted because it has got stained, and maybe a board needs to be put there, please don't litter this place, no garbage here. Then he thought maybe a little bit of concrete has to be laid there so that the gutter is made proper and it doesn't form a pile there. So he was doing all this mental calculation in his mind at 11:30 in the night. Next morning, he is coming for Nagar Sankirtan, 5:30 in the morning. And he takes the same road. When he comes, what does he see? The garbage is cleared, the wall is painted, the notice is there, the gutter has been made, just as he had planned. And he had no idea how did it happen. And definitely our administration is not so good, especially outside the ashram, to come and do it in the middle of the night. He said, somebody has done it and it has been done the very same way I had planned it. So he was very thrilled, but he didn't know what to make of it. He went for Nagar Sankirtan, he finished his breakfast, he came and sat for darshan. And just a few rows ahead of him was one of the senior lecturers. And that day when Swami came for darshan, Swami came and stood next to this lecturer and Swami started talking to him. Swami started speaking something to him. So this boy was not listening because he thought that it's a conversation between them, personal conversation. But suddenly something which Swami said caught his attention. Know what Swami said? Swami said, my boys, they think that Swami simply wastes their energy. My boys think that Swami simply makes them wait. This boy thought, my God, this was exactly what I was thinking yesterday. So he realized that that was a message which was being given to him, but through that lecturer. So he started listening. So Swami said, when I make anybody wait, I give them a chance for them to work on themselves. And even without their knowledge, I work on them. This is not only for these band of students who are waiting. This is for all of us, every devotee. Swami said, when I make anybody wait, I am giving that person a chance to work on himself or herself. And very silently, even without their knowledge, I am working on them. If this was not a bolt for this boy enough, what Swami told after that was even more revealing. Swami said, you know, my students keep saying, I want to do seva, I want to do seva. People keep telling, I want to do seva. They don't understand what seva I want them to do. They don't understand how Swami expects them to do service. Swami said, I want them to do seva the way Swami does seva. I want them to do service the way Swami does service. Because Swami says, you are a reflection of me. You should be like me. That's why Swami would often say, no other inspiration, there are no other ideals. I alone should be your ideal. Look up only to me. Make me your hero. Make me the one who you worship. Swami said, I want them to do service like how I do service. And Swami explained, how do I do service? I think and it happens. Swami said, I think and it happens. Sankalpa. Swami would call it sankalpa. Swami says, I only make a sankalpa and it happens. Swami said, I want my devotees and students to do service like that. And that you can do if you are as pure as Swami. And this boy who is sitting there, you can imagine, he has just experienced that. Swami has just given him a glimpse of that. What is the state which Swami expects each one of us to reach? It is not that there will not be any process. It's not that every time it's going to happen like this. But every time the flow will be so effortless. You will not even realize that you are doing it. Because you don't believe, you don't think that you are the doer. And this is how Swami wants us to do service. I would like to end with one small anecdote. I don't know if you all know the background. This is from the Mahabharata. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the story of Mahabharata. This is about a king, a warrior called Karna. King Karna, apart from being one of the most valorous characters in the whole story of Mahabharata, he was known as the person of immense charity. He was a philanthropist par excellence. Nobody would go to him and return empty-handed. He would always give, give, give. He was known for his nature to give. And in the final battle of that Mahabharata, this man is shot. He is wounded fatally. He is about to die any time. And there is Lord Krishna. You know, he has tested him throughout his life. But this man has always stuck to that charitable nature of his. He would always give, give, give. So Krishna wants to give him a final test. What does Krishna do? He wears the garb of an old man and goes to this Karna who is about to die. You know, he's in his deathbed. He's bleeding to death. Goes to him and says, "Are you that Karna? Are you the King Karna?" So this man is saying, "Yes, I am." "Oh God, I'm coming from very far. People told me that if you go to Karna, he will fill your hands. He will always give. But here you are about to die. What can you give me?" So Karna says, "Yes, I've lost everything. I'm about to die. My hands are empty. I have nothing to give." So this man says, "Alas, finally one person has come who is going to return from Karna disappointed." So then Karna says, "But there is one thing I can give you. That is all I have. There is only one thing I have with me." And he says, "I only have the merits of all my good actions. I am left with only the merits which I have earned by doing all my good." So this Krishna, who is in the form of this old man, he says, "Oh, so you have the merits. Then give me the merits of all your actions. Give me the merits of all your actions." And then the Karna, it strikes him, this is no ordinary old man. And this is no ordinary charity he is asking from me. And the story goes that in the Indian tradition, when you give something to another person, you're supposed to pour water into your hand as you're handing over that object to that person. Which is symbolically saying that this is no more mine. I am washing my hands of it. This belongs to that person. You no more feel that I have given it. It is mine. You know, many times we do that, you know. After giving also it is mine. Swami would often say a very jocular thing. When Swami went to one particular place, Swami had gone to inaugurate a temple. And there was a fan like this which was placed above Swami. It was running when Swami entered the hall. When Swami went and sat on the throne, there was one man who ran and switched off the fan. Swami said, "Why is he switching off the fan?" And when Swami looked up, on the blades of the fan, that person's name was written, "Donated by so-and-so." So he was thinking, if the fan is rotating, how Swami will see it? So we try to own even after we give. But this is actually a ritual which was meant that when you give, it is no more yours. So this is how you do charity. So this man is saying that I'll give you the merits of all my actions, but there's no water. So what does he do? He pulls out one of the arrows which is stuck in his body, collects the blood, and he pours it into the hands of this old man, and he says, "I offer the merits of all my actions." This old man receives it and then takes the form of Krishna. He says, "You have made your final charity." Because we can do charity all our life. We can keep doing, but if we keep thinking that I am doing, I am the doer, I need to have the merits of all my actions, you are not giving, but you are accumulating. And Krishna came to accept that last offering, the merits of all your actions. So the true seva, the true sacrifice is the sacrifice of doership. Going back to the Trayi session, I'm going to really end with this topic, with this incident. It's quite late. You know, this boy, Swami was sitting, and one day Swami was explaining about the theory of karma, the theory of reaction, reflection, resound. Swami said, whatever you do comes back to you. You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get back good. It is like sowing seeds. Actions are like sowing seeds. You always get back what you sow. So there was this one particular boy who was sitting, and he looked a little more troubled than the others. He was in a bit of confusion. There was a contortion on his face. And Swami noticed it. And Swami said, what are you troubled about? Boy, what is troubling you? So then this boy said, Swami, whatever little bad I do, will it come back to me? Swami said, yes. Whatever little bad you do, you have to come back and suffer it. Swami, even the slightest, without my knowledge, if I do something bad, Swami said, yes, you have to come back and face the repercussions. And then this boy said, Swami, then if I do something good, should I not again come back to enjoy the reaction of that good? Swami said, yes. Even if you do good, you have to come back to enjoy the reactions of that good. So this boy said, Swami, that is my problem. So even doing good is not going to release me. You know, if good can bind me as much as bad, what is the point in doing good? Swami said, yes. Even if you do good, you have to come back to enjoy the reactions of that good. So he said, Swami, what is the way out? Swami said, there is only one way out. You have to give up your doership. When you give up your doership, you are not the one who is there to receive. And this attitude of giving up your doership will come when you foster goodness. When you do good actions, more and more you do good actions, the more and more this attitude of non-doership comes. And the more you do these good actions as an expression of your gratitude, you say, Swami, I'm doing this seva, but I don't want anything in return because this is an expression of my gratitude. This is not my investment. This is an expression of my gratitude. And that is why Swami came to teach us seva. And that is why Swami came. Why should Swami manifest? Why did God manifest? Because Swami said, you cannot go and serve others and be detached. Because always when you do something good, there is a little bit of ego which comes. So Swami put himself in between. Swami said, do it for me. Instead of doing it out of your own volition, say that, Swami, I'm doing it for you. So there is no ego. But eventually when you do, you begin to realize that you're not serving somebody else. You're serving your own self. You are going and serving somebody because you want to peace. You want to appease the pain in you. You're going and helping somebody because you cannot handle the pain which is in you when you see that person suffer. One of the most profound statements that Swami says, Swami tells, I separated myself from myself to love myself. Swami says, I separated myself from myself to love myself. You know, this is one of the most profound statements which Swami has given. I think if you meditate upon it, there are layers and layers of meaning. But I'm going to take one meaning which is very apt for the topic of the day. No, what is, when you set out to do a task, let us say I'm starting out of my home today, and I tell myself, I have to get the morning newspaper. So when will I come back home? When I accomplish the task. So when I go out, when I get the newspaper, I come back home. If I don't find it in the real place, I keep going and looking for it. So I come back home only when I find the newspaper, right? Again, Swami is talking about a journey here. Swami says, I separated myself from myself to love myself. And the puzzle in front of all of us is how to return to that original self. How to go back to that self which we really are, our real source. And Swami is giving us the answer here. You will return to that self if you are able to love everybody as your own self. Because Swami said, I have separated myself from myself to love myself. When I'm able to love everybody as I love myself, when I serve everybody as I'm serving myself, I am beginning to turn back into that journey which will finally lead to the source. I can only pray to Swami that he's put us all in the path. Let us pray that, as always, he holds our hand and takes us through, because he is the source, he is the destination, and he is the guide. So I pray to Swami that he takes us all to that final destination. I offer this humble talk at Swami's lotus feet. Thank you all of you for your very patient listening. If I've said anything wrong, please forgive me. Thank you all for this opportunity. Thank you, Jai Saram.